Welcome to Q&A with TNK. They've surfed the interwebs. They've contemplated, ruminated, and speculated. They've checked the teletype, and now they're ready to answer your questions. Here are your hosts, Tiffany and Kristen.
Hello, and welcome to Q&A with TNK. She's
Tiffany.
And I'm Kristen. Welcome. Good morning. Welcome.
And we have a special guest with us today. Would you like to introduce yourself, Randy? Who are you and what do you do?
Sure. I am Randy Traney, and I am the superintendent of Corbett School District in Corbett, Oregon.
Yeah, that's where I work.
Yay.
Yeah. So we had an interesting question today that we thought we'd bring on the expert for, from Sandy in South Carolina. She says, the Every Student Succeeds Act just replaced No Child Left Behind. How will that affect early childhood education, teachers, and education as a whole? Before we jump into that, I have some questions for Randy, because I don't get to ask him questions like this very often. Randy, what do you do every day? What's the life of a superintendent like?
Yeah.
Mostly, oddly, my job is to walk around and talk to people. I end up being kind of the clearinghouse for information is kind of what my job really is. And lots of mediation. And then, like, maybe the biggest part of my job is worry. That's all I do. I walk around and worry about kind of everything.
Oh, my.
From, you know, which kid is on the bus to is lunch going to be out on time and what's happening with the state budget and, you know, just everything.
You are the master worrier.
I am the head worrier. I get paid to worry.
Oh, my gosh.
And then talk to people about it. That's my job.
Wow.
So I want to interject because we just did an episode on balancing work and home. So because you worry a lot at work, do you carry that home with you or are you able to shut that off when you get home?
As I've done this for 12 years now, I've gotten better at being able to shut it off.
Mm-hmm.
There are some things that just are, you know, some worries are bigger than others.
Right.
And those get to go home with you and you worry about them all the time.
Yeah.
The good part about worries is when you have them, your brain is working on them all the time, and then you sometimes have these epiphanies, you know, at 1:30 in the morning when you wake up and you've solved that particular worry.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good feeling.
Yeah.
It is a good feeling. Yeah.
Well, our next question is, what's the Corbett School District spiel, I guess? That was very hard to say. So what makes our school district awesome to you? What do you like?
Yeah,
best?
I want to know this because from what Tiffany tells me, it seems like an awesome school district.
Well, the super answer and the answer that's real is it's the people that work here that make it awesome. But that's honestly, In my first book, I talk about this, where it does not matter what the administrator can have super fantastic ideas and great, you know, plans and have gone through all the worries and have everything all addressed. It's the people on the ground that have to do the job that matter.
Yeah.
Sounds like there's a dog somewhere.
Oh, you can hear her. She's...
Yep.
She gets sad sometimes.
She's howling.
Yeah. But honestly, so... The thing that makes Corbett really special is all of the teachers and all the other employees that work here. We've got this weird combo where we're asking people here to do more for less, and they've all really embraced it, and they do a great job. I don't quite know how we've got into that situation, but we sure have.
I know. I really like working there. I feel like it's an excellent and supportive work environment. I think the administration has something to do with that.
Oh, yeah, love that. Yeah, I mean,
there's all the all the policies and how we've set things up and things that I believe in. But it wouldn't matter if I believed in it if everybody else didn't. Practically speaking, the things that I think make Corbett work is size is very important. We are about the right size. I've done lots of research on when schools are at their most efficient at producing graduates, and it's in the range of that we are as far as total enrollment. So that's important. Relationships are really critically important. So we try to take one really good teacher and leave them with kids as long as possible. So, you know, 2 or 3 years, like 2 years for you in preschool and then 3 years in the other. Because relationships are what drive people, kids especially. And then a continuous progress model where we try to ignore grade level as much as possible and we take each kid from where they are and we move them forward and it doesn't matter what grade they're in. And then all that manifests itself into high school kids who are further along than their other peers once they hit ninth grade, and we end up with crazy, crazy, crazy achievement. Like the average student from Corbett graduates in the 99.98th percentile for the number of advanced placement courses they've taken.
Whoa.
We have a 97% graduation rate, which is the highest around, especially of any school of any size. You know, you can find little schools where they only have 5 kids and they can post 100% graduation rate.
Right.
Yeah.
And the next year they could have an 80% graduation rate.
What's each graduating class's, like, average size graduating class?
Right now we're averaging about 100 and about 100 kids per grade level.
Okay. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yep.
I did not know that you guys like cycle through, so the children are with the teachers for a few years. That is really cool.
Yeah, multi-age works with a continuous progress model because it forces people to abandon the idea that there's grade level things.
Oh.
Even though the whole rest of the country is all built around grade level standards.
Yeah.
But like if you take a classroom of 30 kids and they're all fifth graders and you were to do a reading inventory on them and it was a random sampling, they're going to span 6 grade levels of reading, just a random sample. There is no such thing as a fifth grade reader. And then so grade level schools get into traps where they're like, and this is the fifth grade curriculum and this is what all the fifth graders are going to read, and fifth grade, fifth grade, fifth grade, fifth grade. And then they quickly realize, hey, wait a minute, that doesn't work because we've got kids on the left side of this curve and the right side of the curve. And then they start building extra programs. I call them bandages to fix that initial grade level mistake. And then they have names like special ed and TAG. And then that rolls up in high school and you get all these weirdo, well, that's regular 10th grade English, and then that was pre-10th grade English, and this is advanced English, and this is honors English, and this is AP English, and this, you know. When I first got here 12 years ago, we had 13 different levels of English in a high school that only had 200 kids.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow.
And how does that work now? What does the high school structure for English look like, for example?
Like now?
Yeah.
We have ninth grade English and 10th grade English, and then every junior and senior takes AP Literature and then AP Language, and it just rotates every year.
Wow.
And that's There's 4 years of English.
I'm sorry, I keep interrupting you. I have a burning question on my mind. So you obviously have a very, very high rate of graduation, and students place very high. What do you have any idea as far as mental health, like in your district as compared to maybe any other district that doesn't do the continuous progress model? Is there less instances of mental health type disorders like anxiety or depression? Do you
That's
have
a good
any
question.
idea?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't have any data about, how we would
Right.
compare to anybody else. Yeah, I just don't have any.
Right.
It'd only be me anecdotally thinking about
Exactly.
things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds like a fun research project, though.
It
That
does.
would
Sign
be.
me up. I just like in the research that I've done on how people learn, and I think like if it was looked into, I would almost guarantee that with that continuous progress model and the no assigned grade levels, where it's kind of that's not the forefront of who you are, I almost wonder if the instances of mental health disorders would be a lot less. It'd be
Yeah,
really
that
cool
would
to
be
see.
really
Yeah,
interesting.
I would love to see that.
Yeah, anyway, there you go. What else you got, Tiffany?
I'm curious, so on to this Every Student Succeeds business. Randy, how does that affect your day to day? Have you seen any trickle down of that? Is there anything that you're excited about or is staying the same?
There are trends that I'm optimistic about, but I'm not going to go so far as excited because I've been disappointed too many times. Those federal dollars that are attached to the, I don't care if we call it No Child Left Behind or, any new name we put on it, they end up being the tail wagging the dog all the time. So if you looked at Oregon, the amount of money that the feds are going to put into that program and the amount of compliance that we have to do feels, really odd. And I can't remember exactly what the number is, but let's say in Oregon it's $400 million that gets spread out. And that's not nothing, but
No.
it isn't even 10% of the overall money spent on education. So if you're contributing less than 10% of the funds, why should you be mandating 100% of the
Ooh.
compliance effort
That's a
for
really good
those
way to
funds?
look
So
at it.
that's the backwards part. So the part I'm optimistic about is it feels like all that accountability stuff, they are allowing broader interpretations and they're giving states more control over what those accountability standards are going to be. So that's good. I'm optimistic. I'm a little worried about the state of Oregon that oftentimes they don't seem to take advantage of these things and make it easier on school districts and teachers and kids. So they have a huge opportunity to change what it means to be compliant and do the accountability, and I don't know if they're going to or not. So that's the part I'm not sure of.
And just to clarify, when you say accountability, what does that mean?
So, with No Child Left Behind, it had swung way the other direction, right? Where you ended up with all of these schools who were, found not to be meeting the standards, and then they'd, have to have their bottom blank percentage of teachers removed, and they'd have all these supports brought in that didn't feel as much like supports, felt more like punishment. And that kind of stuff is not in the law anymore. It says, okay, states, you have to have an accountability system. You get to decide what it is,
So,
which has the potential to be way less onerous on districts.
yeah, but they have to take advantage of that and figure out
But
how to
they
do
have to
that.
take advantage of it. Yep. So the state of Oregon can make it as hard or as easy or sensical as they want. We'll just see what happens. And every state gets to do this now.
Would it be advantageous for Oregon to wait and see what works in other states? Or do they
Well,
need to
there are
jump on
time
it
there
and change right
yeah,
away?
there's timelines. Yep, there's timelines and everybody has to hit the same timeline. So
Oh, I see. Good to know. So
what does Oregon do right now for accountability? Like what has, is there like standardized tests that have to be taken at certain grade levels?
Yep.
How does
So
it work?
for At the student level, every student in grades 3 through 8 has to be tested every year, and juniors have to be tested. You've got my brain going on a perfect example of one of the things that Oregon is currently getting wrong. We have to test 95% of our students to be in compliance, and then get the federal dollars, like the state as a whole. And then, Tiffany, you might have heard about this. There's this push to opt out of the Smarter Balance assessment. That's the current assessment that we use.
The push
is from parents and like the community, or is the push? That must be where it's coming from.
The push is from the public, and if you listen to the politicians, they'll tell you that it has its roots in the teachers' union, the OEA, because sorry, this is going to get really complicated.
Bring it on.
Because a portion of each teacher's evaluation has to be tied to student achievement on the Smarter Balanced Assessment. And then that gets crazy too, because like if you're Tiffany Pearsall, none of our kids are taking the Smarter Balanced Assessment. So
we're really
how do we
good at taking
that?
Standardized tests in preschool.
So that gets teachers broadly upset, and their union broadly upset, because you're tying, you know, if you teach in the richest district in the state where everybody's mom and dad are engineers and lawyers, your assessment results are going to be better than if you teach in, you know, an impoverished district where there's poor funding, right? So that doesn't feel fair. So then there's pushback from teachers' unions, which the politicians say has spilled over into families now, and then there are huge pushes to get out of Smarter Balanced assessments. Like the one of the districts just to the east of us, Hood River, 66% of their high school kids opted out of the test last year.
Wow.
That's crazy.
And then here's where it gets weird, right? Then the state of Oregon, the governor, and the legislatures signed a bill this summer to make it easier for parents to opt out.
Oh, wow.
So all they have to do is say, I'm opting out. They used to have to say, I'm opting out for a medical reason or a religious reason. And now they can just say, I'm opting out. And within, like, the same day that the governor signed that, they sent a note to all the superintendents saying, and oh, by the way, you have to make sure you get 95% of your kids to take the test.
Backwards.
Now we're back to where when you ask me, am I excited about the new? Maybe, but I don't know, because Oregon is crazy pants.
Oh, my gosh.
These things are going opposite directions, right?
Yeah. So what happened to Hood River? If 60-something percent opted out, does that mean they're not eligible for funding anymore?
No, because the funding happens at the state level. Like, the feds will give the state of Oregon the money.
Okay.
And I just used Hood River as an example. There was also a gargantuan opt-out rate in the largest district in the state, Portland. I can't remember what theirs was, but it was really significant. They only tested 88%. They're, you know, well below, and since they have so many kids, that, like, impacts it. And the next one was Beaverton, the second largest district, and the next one was Eugene, also one of the largest districts. So in these, like, it's concerning. Like, we may not make it. And then what? Then what will happen? I could go on and on.
I think we're all fired up.
Yeah.
So I live in Minnesota, and in Minnesota, it seems like the community that I live in, people have no idea. Nobody really has any idea, maybe a select few, that you can opt out of standardized testing. And my children were in public school last year. They have now moved to private school, but last year they were in public school, and I opted my third grader out of standardized testing, and they were like, how do you even do that? I had to ask the principal, and he's like, oh, I've never had anybody do that before. Let me check into how you do that. It was like unheard of here in Minnesota. It's just kind of insane that it's so prevalent on the West Coast and the East Coast, and it hasn't quite made its way to the Midwest yet. So,
yeah,
that's funny.
So, I have a Facebook friend in Eugene, and you said Eugene, and actually just yesterday she posted about how she actually wanted some of her like Facebook friends from around the country to send her school districts. I don't know if it's the superintendent or who it was, an email saying that their hot, like their large class sizes is basically ridiculous. Have you heard any rumblings about what's going on with class sizes for different districts in Oregon? Like what's the average? What's good?
Yeah, class size is always an issue. In the broadest sense, in the last 15 years, K-12 education share of the budget has dropped from, and I'm doing these off the top of my head, so I don't have it in front of me, probably about 48% of the budget, and now it's down to 37% of the overall budget. Wow. So the pie has been cut up differently than it used to, which has had dramatic impacts on class size across the whole entire state. In Corbett, we spend differently than every... We're one of the lowest funded districts in the state of Oregon. In Multnomah County, the next closest district gets about 20% more dollars per student than we do.
Oh, wow.
Why is that?
The top... oh, geez. that's a big question.
Is that a loaded question?
No, it's
redact?
Not loaded. It's just, I don't know how much time we have. I could explain why.
Yeah, explain why.
Okay, so there is a funding formula that got introduced decades ago now. It used to be that each local school district was funded by the people who lived in that district, and the state provided very little of the money. That ended decades ago, and now everybody's local property tax goes to Salem, and then it's redistributed according to a funding formula. And the basic idea behind that was it equalized funding across the state. Because you used to have the really rich districts getting lots of money.
Riverdale,
which they still are. And it used to, frankly, be Corbett.
Oh.
Corbett residents used to pay $28 per thousand to run this school.
Wow.
Now Corbett residents only pay about $17 per thousand. Total all of their money in to run the school. So they're paying way less. Corbett residents only actually fund 15% of the operation of the school anymore.
Wow.
And the rest comes from other Oregonians. Anyhow, in the funding formula, which is meant to equalize funding and make it more equitable, there are a few little schools that get hammered in the funding formula because we're a rural school on the edge of an urban area. So if we were the same school and we were out in Eastern Oregon, there's some other weighted amounts of funds that you get for being rural and further away from other. We don't get that. And that there's lots of little things like that. So it ends up that there's a couple districts like us who are dramatically differentially funded from others. Like Portland Public gets 60% more dollars per student than we do.
Wow.
And it's pretty, I mean, it's really dramatic. Now, despite all that, to circle back to class size, Corbett has the lowest class size in Multnomah County, except for Riverdale, which gets 250% of what we get funded. But that's because people are paying tuition to go to the public school. So we spend our money differently. We spend it on teachers, and lots of other districts spend it on all kinds of other support services. So like administrators and bus drivers and custodians and, you know, everybody who's not a teacher that works at school. So then our class size ends up like our primaries right now are 24 and a half. And then our intermediates are 3, 4, 5s. They're like 27 and a half, 28. Middle school is too high. We're at 30, 29 and a half, 30. And then high school, it drops back down again because of licensure requirements. You end up just needing to hire more teachers to be in compliance. Mm-hmm. And so our average class size in high school is probably 25, 26.
Oh, wow.
Nice. And generally, like if you just go down the hill a little bit, you know, the next closest districts, they're going to be 6 or 7 students higher at almost all grade levels.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm in Minnesota. Go ahead.
I was going to interject about funding for our early childhood listeners. I had class size and funding explained to me very well by the lovely Dee Dee Haynes, in that in preschool you talk about raising your rates. You know, when you have families, new families coming in, and you need to raise your rates in order to pay for your higher insurance rate or something like that. In elementary school, you have to increase number of students. That's how you increase your rates.
Oh, wow.
So we're not allowed to have more than 20, but we can increase our rates. For them, it's the exact opposite. They increase the number of kids to make up for their rates.
Money.
Yeah.
Yep.
Wow. So my biggest question is what can parents do at our level to fight back against large class sizes?
Yeah. So political advocacy is the only path forward. And I think this is going to apply broadly across the entire United States. Mm-hmm. In each state legislature, they have to prioritize education over other things that are also important. Like in Oregon, if you listen to the, you know, legislatures, they tell you that they do 3 things. They educate, they medicate, and they incarcerate. Hmm. And in Oregon, more money has gone into incarceration and medication, and less has gone into education. And so most of this problem could be fixed without even talking about adding taxes, by deciding how to spend the pie differently. Yep.
Wow. What would be the first avenue to start for a brand new person wanting to get more active in their community's policies?
Yeah, I think the first one would be to try to get, from an education standpoint, is start to attend board meetings. Okay. And even probably more importantly than that, budget committee meetings. And just listen for a long time. Unfortunately, like lots of things, it gets really complicated really fast. And if you just hear one, you know, if you just go for one day, you aren't going to get the full picture.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But attend budget committee meetings and start learning about how the budget is put together and where the funds come from in each state, because it's different how the money is allocated to each school district. And start at the local level.
Yeah.
Very cool. It's good advice.
Cool. Wow. I feel I have learned so much already.
I know.
So
me
much
too.
For coming today.
So yeah, I want to kind of circle back to Every Student Succeeds Act and No Child Left Behind. What can you explain to us what Every Student Succeed Act is? Like, what is it?
Ooh.
I only caught part of the question. Student Succeeds Act. I heard that part.
Yeah. In general, for somebody who's not politically oriented, how would you describe that in a nutshell?
Yeah, so in a nutshell, I would say that the Every Student Succeeds Act is an act by the federal government that describes how they're going to allot money for education, K-12 education across the country, mm-hmm. and the requirements that each state has to follow in order to receive those funds.
Mm. Okay.
And what's better about the Every Student Succeed Act from No Child Left Behind is the club part of it has been reduced. It used to be the accountability club is less than it used to be. It used to be like, you know, we're going to beat you up if you don't follow these rules, and we're going to make your life really, really, really miserable if you don't, you know, meet these things. And in No Child Left Behind, of course, there was ridiculous standards put in that one, you know, eventually it was leading to 100% of all students at every grade level will meet every single target or you'll lose your money.
Which is ridiculous.
Which is ridiculous, right? That's fine if it's an absurd aspiration. Everybody recognizes it was an aspirational goal. But it was ridiculous when it came with a club that they were going to beat you with when that didn't happen. And, of course, as we got closer to that 100% number, then, lo and behold, something had to change.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Oh, gosh. Oh. Yeah.
So,
I don't know if that was a pretty nutshell one.
Yeah, I liked it.
I did too. Are we ready? Do you have any other burning questions for Randy, or should we do our what would you do?
I think I've covered all my questions. Randy, is there anything else you desperately need to share with us before we ask you a really ridiculous question?
I'm ready for a ridiculous question.
Okay.
All right.
We're ready for what would you do? Okay, so this is for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
You have been required, as part of the new Every Student Succeeds Act, to form a parent book group, using a work of fiction as the basis for your book club. What work of fiction would you pick?
Oh, my.
I think the first book that came into my mind is I would make everybody in my group read The Lorax by Dr. Seuss. It was his birthday this last week.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite books. I don't know how funny I'm being.
It's a good
I just
book.
Think there are tons of great messages in there. And, you know, it's got a scientific bent, and being an ex-science teacher, I've always appreciated that. And as far as tying it back to Every Student Succeeds Act, I guess I'd be tying it to the bigger picture of it's not just every student in the United States that, like, the Lorax teaches us that we're on this planet with these limited resources, and it needs to be, like, the Everybody in the Planet Succeeds Act. And it feels like right now in our country, we're kind of like, there's a lot of denial going on about lots of things politically, and I don't know. Lorax just seems like a great book.
Yeah.
Aww, what a good way to wrap it up.
Yeah.
I wasn't funny at all.
No, it doesn't have to be funny.
Okay.
No. No. So I think we should end it there, because that was a good way to wrap it up. Well, Tiffany.
Well, Kristen and Randy.
It's been fun.
See you next time on Q&A with...
Okay, thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah, thank you.
This has been Q&A with T and K. Thank you for listening. From serious to silly, Tiffany and Kristen are eager to answer your questions. Just email them to q4tandk@gmail.com. That's q4tandk@gmail.com. We'll be back next week with another episode. Music by Kurt Pearsall, Tiffany's sweet, sweet hubby.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.